Do you have children? Nearly 1 in 5 American women never have kids by choice or circumstance, a number that's gone up dramatically since the 1970s. But of course, despite the fact that womanhood and motherhood have been culturally linked throughout history, there have always been women who did not become mothers. And their story is told in the new book, Without Children, The Long History of Not Being a Mother, by Peggy O'Donnell Heffington. Peggy is a professor of history at the University of Chicago and writes for Jezebel, the Los Angeles Review of Books, the Boston Globe, and other outlets. Here she is to share 5 big ideas from her book.
Hi, I'm Peggy O'Donnell Heffington. I'm a historian at the University of Chicago, where I write and teach on topics like the history of women and gender. When I started writing my book, Without Children, The Long History of Not Being a Mother, I thought I'd write a pretty straightforward history of women without children in the past. We know a lot about women who were mothers, I thought, so what about the history of women who didn't have children? It turns out, though, that the story is more complicated and a lot further reaching than I thought. I'm going to share 5 of the key insights from my book. Insight number 1, there have always been women without children. Early on, when I told people about my book, more than one asked me how I could be writing a long history of not having children, since, as they correctly pointed out, hormonal birth control was invented in the 1950s. American women had access to legal and safe abortions for only about 2 generations, from Roe v. Wade in 1973 to the Dobbs decision in 2022. They asked me, was I writing a history of nuns, spinsters, and infertility? Well, it turns out there have always been women without children. More specifically, people were controlling their reproduction long before the invention of the pill or the IUD. Recipes for abortives and contraceptives go way back in history. The ancient Greeks and Romans and medieval Germans and colonial Americans all knew of things that would work to prevent or end a pregnancy at least some of the time. In Northwestern Europe since the early modern period, it's been the norm for 1 in 5 women to have no children at all. Some of them may have suffered from infertility. Some of them may have avoided heterosexual sex, but not all of them. One of the people I write about in the book is Madame Restel. She was an abortion provider in New York City for more than 40 years, from the 1830s to the late 1870s. Restel's career mapped onto the period in American history when abortion went from completely legal, at least until quickening, the moment when the mother first feels the fetus move, to completely illegal. Connecticut was the first state to criminalize abortion after quickening in 1821. New York followed suit in 1845. But Restel's business flourished after 1845, even though the services she offered were illegal. She continued to provide contraception and abortion-causing pills to women across the city for 3 more decades. Women were seeing Madame Restel at great legal risk, and they were seeing people who were much less good at their jobs than Restel at great risk to themselves. People who might have given them pieces of wire to insert into their uteruses to cause a miscarriage, or people who were giving them poisons that might kill them. And yet they took those risks in an effort to exercise control over their reproduction. This is important because there's this belief on some parts of the political spectrum that if you do things like make abortion illegal or contraception harder to access, that people will magically stop trying to control their reproduction. And history just shows us that's not at all the case. There have always been reasons not to have children, and women have always sought out ways to not have them, whether or not it was safe or legal. We should assume that women have not been having children for about as long as they've been having them. Insight number 2. The reasons women didn't have children in the past are not so different than women's reasons today. The number of babies born in the United States has dropped every year for nearly a decade, and millennials seem to be heading for the highest rate of childlessness in American history. It seems like everyone, from politicians to journalists to your grumpy relatives at Thanksgiving, are asking, why are today's young women not having children? Why are they messing up this one really basic function of human biology? When surveys ask young women this question, their answers are pretty consistent. They don't have the support networks, money, or jobs that would make children possible. They've experienced infertility, and treatments like IVF are either too expensive or haven't worked. They worry about the effects climate change will have on their children. And of course, they just want lives that prioritize other things. Women in the past weren't so different. They didn't have children because they lacked community support. In French colonial Canada, for example, historians have shown that the further a woman moved from her family of origin, the fewer kids she was likely to have. They struggled to balance work and children. They experienced infertility, worried about the natural environment their children would be raised in. And of course, they wanted lives that didn't conform to expectations. Many nuns in medieval Europe would have become nuns out of genuine religious devotion. But there are also examples you can point to of people who became nuns because they were seeking an alternative to the traditional life of a wife and mother. The big difference between us and women in the past is that modern life and the society we've built have made those reasons loom larger than ever, making it harder than ever to have kids, even for those who might otherwise have done so. Insight number three. Choice is more complicated than we tend to think, and it always has been. I can trace the origin of the book to my personal experience of moving from Berkeley, California, where I had just finished my PhD, to the United States Military Academy at West Point, where I had a postdoctoral fellowship. I was 29 at the time, and I really didn't know anyone who was thinking seriously about having kids anytime soon. Children seemed like a luxury in time, money, and emotional resources that I couldn't imagine most of us could possibly afford. But then West Point was, as one colleague put it to me, one huge toddler birthday party. Women my age had 2, 3 kids. This contrast got me thinking about the material, financial, and societal circumstances that make it possible for people to parent, and about the ones that make it impossible. I realized that this didn't really fit with how we normally talk about having children or not, as a choice, as a thing individuals opt into or out of consciously and freely. We think people without kids just didn't want them, so they didn't have them. But for a lot of women without children, today and in the past, it just wasn't that simple. There are and were tons of other factors, economic, historical, environmental, personal, that expand or constrain their list of possible options. So for some people without children, today and in the past, what we call a choice really didn't feel like a choice. For example, women who were in their fertile years during the Great Depression had the highest rate of childlessness in American history, 20%. 1 in 3 Black women in that cohort, who were dealing with the economic collapse as well as legalized racism and Jim Crow laws, never had children. 2 decades later, childlessness fell to almost nothing during the baby boom, which also happened to coincide with the most generous social welfare programs in American history. Choice, in the sense of choosing to have a child or not, is important, of course. But history also shows us that the material, financial, societal, and environmental context that choice is made in is at least as important. Insight number four. The things that make parenting difficult are the same as the reasons women give when they say they don't plan to have children at all. The COVID-19 pandemic showed us clearly how difficult it is to parent in the United States today. Increasing demands of work, increasing costs of housing and childcare, the lack of parental leave, sick time, and vacation have all contributed to the immensely heavy burden parents, and mothers in particular, are carrying. The final piece of the book clicked into place for me when I realized that many of the reasons that make it difficult to parent today, lack of support, money, and time, are the same reasons many women give when they say they don't plan to have children at all. This is a depressing thought. I hope it is also a unifying one, because... Insight number five. The divide between mothers and women without children wasn't always so wide, and it doesn't need to be now. So, fun historical fact. John Hancock, the Declaration of Independence signatory and founding father, was raised by his childless aunt and uncle, Lydia and Thomas Hancock. John's father had died when he was a kid, and his mom fell on hard times, so she sent John to live with his aunt and uncle. They raised him, sent him to Harvard, and made him their heir. When his uncle died, John Hancock inherited a huge fortune and his uncle's massive shipping firm, making him one of the wealthiest and most powerful men in the American colonies. Lydia lived with him in his Beacon Hill mansion until the end of her life. This story is exceptional, of course. Most people didn't inherit enormous fortunes from their uncles. But Lydia Hancock and the way she took on the role of mother without having or even formally adopting a child was not so exceptional. I had this sort of alarming moment fairly early on in research when I realized that childless women in the way we think of them today, as fundamentally different than mothers, and having made some sort of decision to live a totally different kind of life than moms did, sort of disappeared if you went 1.5 or 2 centuries back in the American or Western European past, or certainly anywhere else in the world. Social motherhood was a huge part of life. In the American colonies, children were passed from homes that had many children into homes that had few or none. Women without children of their own played critical roles in helping their sisters and neighbors and friends raise their biological children. And I remember thinking, shoot, is there even a book there? But then I realized that is part of the story. There is a long history of women not having children. But childlessness as this most obvious and stark marker of identity and social role is actually relatively new. By his 8th birthday, John Hancock had 2 women who were mothers to him in different ways, one that had given birth to him and one that was currently doing the mothering. Indigenous communities in North America were structured around kinship networks of women who raised their children collectively. For Black Americans, caring for children whose parents had been taken from them, whether by slavery, mass incarceration, or other forms of institutional racism, has long been a form of community survival and resistance. In the past, women gave birth, became mothers, and raised their children alongside other women, not all of whom had biological children of their own, but most of whom served, at least temporarily, as someone's mother. Today, so much of the divide we feel between moms and non-mothers comes down to having lost the community and support that once would have bound us together. Overwhelmed moms feeling alone against the world, with cause, and non-mothers also with cause, feeling shut out of the project our society values most. It's my hope that remembering our shared history can help us envision a future where the difference between having and not having children wasn't so stark, where we could offer mothers networks of support and involve non-mothers in raising the next generation. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy the book.
Thank you, Peggy. That was 5 Big Ideas from Without Children, The Long History of Not Being a Mother by Peggy O'Donnell Heffington. Also, check out our book bite for Women Without Kids, The Revolutionary Rise of an Unsung Sisterhood by Ruby Warrington. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.